My name is Eric Van Horn. I bought my first franchise in my 20s, and since then, I've owned 6 brands with 25 stores in 8 states. I've also helped 1,000 people find the right franchise for them. People like us who are not cut out for the 9-to-5 and like to work smarter, not harder, how do we find the right franchise, buy it, grow it, sell it, and how do we do it in a way to own the business without it owning us? Those are the questions, and I'm on a mission to give you the answers. Welcome to Franchise Secrets.
Different sectors in franchise, and where do you see that in the 80-20 model of you're like 80, you know, basically you can 80% of the things that you've seen across 100 brands can go from brand to brand. Where are some of the different sectors very different? I would say QSRs are different. You know, it's probably an outlier, which is a massive part of franchise. And that's what most people think of when they think of franchising is, you know, these quick service restaurants or Subways or McDonald's or whatever it is. And then you've got these small service brands, you know, that are, you know, really inexpensive to get into, mostly owner operator. And then you've got everything in between. So give the listener some insight into your view of the different sectors.
Look, you asked the question from the consumer-facing side of the business, right? Now, I'm going to go back to, I'm going to answer it from the franchisor as a business model mindset, okay? As a franchisor, there's not a material difference, right? So again, I'm going to go back to my definition of franchising: recruiting, training, developing, resourcing, and leading a team of entrepreneurs to build a brand. They all have to do it, right? It's just what's your version of training? So some businesses are more technical. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. More technical training, still training. Some are more commoditized and require greater skills, right? So the person around point makes all the difference. Well, you know, that's skills training. Resourcing, right? So some businesses evolve more than other businesses evolve. It's just you got to resource the entrepreneur supply lines. And then leading. Right. So, you know, we're big firm believers of, you know, kind of a servant leadership model as it relates to franchising is probably being the best. Like, so you've been around franchising. How do you think entrepreneurs feel about a command and control or high compliance cultures? And then if you look at how franchisors lead, right, look at the FDD. It's almost all designed inside of a compliance or command and control structure, which ideologically is designed to get pushback from franchisees, right?
Absolutely.
Now, I have no issue with franchisee pushback. I think tension is part of the model between franchisees and franchisors. It's, you know, it's, you can codify tension, right? You can say, okay, part of the codification is what do you do when there's franchisee-franchisor conflict? Well, how many franchisors have that to train their franchise employees on either how to create or how to resolve franchisee conflict? It's part of the model, right?
So what advice would you give to a franchisor that's starting to get that feedback or tension from franchisees? And I think you call it the me stage in street smart franchising, where the franchisee, you know, their success or whatever, it's about them. And it's probably before they get into the we stage where it's more mutual.
Yeah, so that's a great question, right? So that's the Greg Nathan's model from Profitable Partnerships. Brilliant book. Everybody should read it who's a franchisor. It's one of the few franchisor-specific publications, right? So that me stage where, you know, franchisees mastered the model, right? You know, it kind of gets in, well, I'm successful. You know, and the franchisor is like, well, what – I had something to do with that. I think there's responsibilities on both ends, right? So a lot of franchisors, you know, once a franchisee basically is competent in the business, where's their value add, mm-hmm. right? If I'm paying, like if a consumer's paying money, they got to extract more value than they're contributing in price or the model breaks down, right? So why should the franchisor be any different? There's a lot of franchisors think royalties equals rent. you're renting my rent. No, hang on a second, right? You know, I think royalties should equal value add, right? So if I take a dollar in royalties, well, I better add more than a dollar in value. The same way the franchisee's got to add more than a dollar value than they extract in price, right?
Definitely.
So that's what creates the me on the franchisee end. Sometimes it's me. Why? Because you're not earning my money. Mm-hmm. Right? You're not evolving the brand. You're not positioning us well for the future. Now I have to do it. Me. And some franchisees are just kind of like belligerent, right? Welcome to entrepreneurship, right? So you know, sometimes when I'm meeting with franchisees, I speak at a lot of franchisor conferences to franchisees, you know, those national conferences. You know, first thing I'd say to a franchisee, if you guys could actually follow processes and systems that were designed by third parties, you'd all have jobs. Right? Yeah, I said, the jive you're running on the franchisor is you think this time it was going to be different, right? Except you forgot wherever you go, there you are, right? Like that old book title. You know, so let's have some recognition. If you're a franchisee, you are wired to resist doing what other people tell you to do. And that's what makes you a great entrepreneur, probably a crappy employee, but that's why you're an entrepreneur. But it also makes you very difficult to manage and lead. So if you own your garbage, that's the me, right? Then you go back to the franchisor and say, hey, listen, they're giving you money, earn it. Earn it. You add more value, you know, in products, services, support, profitability. Okay, then you're extracting the royalty streams and you won't have a problem.
One thing that I think about as you were talking is, you know, as a franchisee myself in a few different brands right now and multiple locations, I love the systems and processes from the franchisor because it's not me following them. It's my management team following them, and they are the employees, maybe some with equity, but they are wired to do it. And it's helped me expand my businesses following the franchisor model because I want my employees to follow the systems and the processes, and they're much better at it than I am. So when I hear people saying, you know, I'm too entrepreneurial to be a part of a franchise organization, I think that's kind of a limiting belief, or they don't fully understand the value that systems and processes that we're talking about at the franchisee level really bring to a business owner that can expand rapidly and really grow a large business. Because there's a lot of franchisees out there with very large businesses that a lot of, you know, entrepreneurs don't realize. I mean, have you seen that to be true?
Yeah, like I matter of fact, I would have heard it exactly the same way you heard it. If somebody tells I'm too entrepreneurial for a franchise system, how I would hear it is I don't value products and systems, right? Because all franchising is, it's an apprenticeship model, right? And then it's quintessential buy or build argument, right? I could buy systems or I could build them. What am I better off doing? They just don't put the math to the paper and try to see what value is actually being created.
Gosh, yeah, I've seen so much value in other people learning from their mistakes and at the franchisor level, seeing, you know, and the other franchisees, and then take that out and just being around other entrepreneurs. I mean, people and processes that can take you so much further than you can if you're just out there slugging it on your own. And a lot of these guys that are like that, they're really more owner operator people. They think they're big entrepreneurs, but what they want is to be in control, and they're really not wanting to build a big organization that they can pull themselves out of.
Well, sophisticated entrepreneurs would never make that comment, right?
Correct.
Right. So they would, everything, all, it would all be situational, right? What are the processes? What are the systems? What are they currently producing? Right. See, if you look at franchising, it just purely as an investment vehicle, it's like anything, right? What's the value of any investment vehicle? It's the predictability and the size of the return relative to the time and money risk, right? Mm-hmm. Time, money, and effort.
Exactly.
Right. So you know, a good system with great applied learning behind it, right, should be a better investment and more predictable than something I could do on my own. But often the case, you know, franchisors come out too early, right, before they have any applied learning, before their systems are tight, right, before they legislate out or systematize around, you know, the common mistakes, before they're adult learning experts, right? And they, you know, they lead themselves to believe they've got something of real value, which they don't, right? Now, a lot of franchisors do. And, you know, those are the ones that the market picks for, mm-hmm, right, massive acceleration, and that's what you see.
Let's go back to, we were talking about franchisee-franchisor relationship a little bit ago.
Yeah.
And I've noticed in different brands, some people, some of the brands focus on the bottom, you know, third, and to try to bring them up. Some brands focus on that, you know, the middle group of franchisees that are, they're actually doing stuff, but they're not at the top. And then there are, you know, just about all brands, there's the top 10, top 20% that are really good and they're innovating. And yet the franchisor is not innovating fast enough for them. So talk about what, from a franchisor's perspective with systems and processes, where should the franchisor be spending time? Give some advice to the people that are in the top 10, top 20% to tell them, hey, just be patient, or hey, this is just what it is, or this is how you can help your franchisor show you some love.
First of all, great comment. It is so loaded, right, with information. I really want to unpack it to be able to answer it well, right? So one is, how do you define the system, right? So we would define the system as the whole ecosystem of franchisor employees, suppliers, business format, training systems, and the franchisee community, because it's one gigantic brand, right? Like, so, and within any system, now I'm talking about the franchisee's performance. Now what you're talking about is the bell curve, right? And you broke the bell curve down into three components, you know, top performers, middle performers, bottom performers, right? Yep. And yeah, I would tell you exceptional franchisors would look at the bell curve this way. And this is how they would spend their time. They would say, okay, the middle of the bell curve, that's what the system's predictably producing, right? Because that's why it's the middle of the bell curve, right? That's why it's not at the highest point. You got diverse people using the same system have a tendency to produce the same results. That's the system, right? And that's how they would define it. So they would go to the right of the bell curve, the top performers, and say, you know what? They actually added to the system. They innovated, which is what you were talking about. They did something that nobody else is doing. They got something figured out that is not institutionalized in the brand yet, right, as a best practice. And they would spend time with the top producers and seeing, what are they doing differently than we're training everybody else to? What are they seeing? What are they doing? Where are they spending their time? How do they envision the brand, right? They figured something out. They see something else. And then you institutionalize that. Now, when you institutionalize it and you do a good job, then the entire bell curve moves to the right. So where should a franchisor be spending their time? Not moving the categories, moving the entire bell curve to the right, right? Now, on the bottom third, most franchisors spend probably 80% of their time, money, and resources trying to prop up the bottom, just like anything, right? Mm-hmm. Like if a franchisor didn't have a bottom, they wouldn't know what to do with themselves. They'd have so much money and so much time, right? You know, one is I would look at the recruiting systems that brought on board, like where was the miss, right? Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of the bottom third can be helped and you can move them into the middle. And then, I'm a little bit like Jock Welch, where if somebody's in the bottom 10%, they're probably not right for the business. They need to be exited.
Yeah.
Entrepreneurs have a tendency to hold on to businesses too long, especially if they're in the bottom. The power of positive thinking, I'm going to will my way out of it. Some can, some can't. Some just aren't wired for it, right? You know, we don't do enough, in my opinion, as a community, skills matching. You know, the franchise, look at it. What are they actually, what's their particular brand, the genius, and how would that particularly play out in the model? You know, it's if they have the money, they have open territory, they have a passion for the product, let them in. It's not enough. We would never do that if we were hiring them as an executive.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, I've seen franchisors have more rigorous processes for hiring secretaries than they do for recruiting franchisees. Right. So raising the bottom third, I think exiting people, you have to spend some time and resources on that. Very mediocre and average franchisors look at the bell curve differently. They look at the bell curve differently. The top third, well, they're following the system. The middle third, well, they're following the system, just not as well as the top third, and the bottom third aren't following the system. Now, if that's how you're viewing the bell curve, where's your responsibility as a franchisor? It doesn't exist. It's all on it's all on the franchisees. Those brands are going to get chewed up in the marketplace over time. And now that there's, you know, 4,000 franchisors and much fewer franchisee buyers than there's ever been.
What do you think a franchise, you mentioned the franchisor should be learning from the top performers and then implementing a lot of that. What kind of value should that franchisor give during that learning process? Because that's a taking from them, but what should they be giving to them in exchange for that relationship or that exchange of information?
Yeah, that's another great question. There's other ways to add value. So a lot of times franchisors think their value is in the mentoring, right? We're the experts, they're not. And then you get a group of franchisees that now are either on par with or more advanced, you know, than the franchisors in that consumer facing model, right? Well, how do you add value? You can add value by creating mastermind groups of top performers, and they could add value to each other, right? Another way to add value is I could incentivize them to grow. Like let's take for instance, right? Let's assume like a franchisor earns $40,000 a year in royalties from a franchisee, right? And let's assume a franchisee, if they're looking to expand, the SBA will pick up 80, 85% of it. And they just have to come up with 15 or 20% of the cash, right? And let's assume that cash is $80,000. Why wouldn't the franchisor loan or give the franchisee the 75, 80 grand, right? 2-year payback. You know, and when private equity is paying 10x, mm-hmm. right? I could make the case they're going to get 200, 300, 400% return on that money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but franchisors don't look at it that way. They don't really understand where the key leverage points are in their model, how their financial model works, how private equity values their business, right? And how to work in partnership with the franchisee to even drive equity value for the franchisor constituents and the franchisee both, right? They operate as if they're operating two separate and distinct brands and two separate and distinct businesses. They don't. There's more synergy than the franchise agreement would lead both the franchisor and franchisee to believe, right? And there's better ways for franchisees and franchisors to work together to drive value and enterprise value for both constituencies if they just seek out those types of solutions.
It's interesting. And I want to go into the private equity world a little bit and the valuation of franchisors, because a lot of franchisors that are at 100 units or 150 units that are thinking about selling, or they're getting the phone calls, hey, we're looking at buying, they look back, and as the private equity group looks into their system, they value it differently than the franchisor. They value it differently than what the franchisor probably thinks they're going to value it. In other words, that's, you know, beings for having territories that are sold but not open.
Oh, and that's exactly.
And a lot of young franchisors and even mature franchisors don't realize that, and you just can't change that. You know, at 5 years into it, the damage has been done. And what I think is interesting, the goals are really aligned from a franchisor perspective, if everybody knows that from the beginning, because the franchisor's goal is not to have a bunch of unopened territories. And that's really, the franchisee should have a goal to open up the territories that they're buying. So how do those goals align? Give a franchisor some perspective on why they should not have sold but not opens, and give the listeners some insight into that.
Well, yeah. So private equity is smart, and they're learning the game. You know, I was at an IFA conference one time, and one of the speakers presented, and I don't know where he accessed the data, but 90% or more of franchisees' development schedules aren't honored. So they sell big, huge, honking territories, and franchisees don't open on schedule. You know, same thing with that master license or that area developer type concept where, you know, they recruit, train, and franchisees for a revenue share, right? So they don't get open, right? So if private equity already knows that. So they don't look at, you're not fooled by, I have 20 open and 400 sold or 400 under development. What are they really buying at the end of the day? They're buying the predictability of the recurring revenue, right? And how well they can monetize it into the future, what growth is left. And so private equity is going to look at these territories and say, okay, these are territories that are now protected that we cannot monetize.
Double ding.
Ding, that's exactly right. Okay. And then other franchisors, there are going to be franchisors listening to this podcast right now thinking, well, if the magic number is 100 to 200, then I sell franchises as fast as I can. Hold on a second. Again, it's predictability of royalty streams. So these private equity guys, they're not going to pay you a premium. They're going to talk to the franchisees. They're going to see who you aligned with, right? And if you didn't do a good job matching or training or developing or resourcing these franchisees or building a powerful team, you're going to get dinged. They're going to say, why should I pay a premium just because your operating problems haven't hit the fan yet? I'm inheriting, right? And then they're going to budget, well, who do I need to bring in to fix it? And then they're going to ding the franchisor on valuation, right? So they're looking to buy it right. The private equity is looking to build it right. And then they're looking to sell it right. So they're looking for companies that are built right. And $2 billion private equity firms as clients now. We have two of them that have a franchising thesis. Right. They're hiring us, but not because of our experience in doing diligence in the consumer facing model, but because we know, we know whether or not a franchisor is built right, because we know where the skeletons are. Right. So they go in, franchisors are not going to be able to, hoodwink private equity for any extended period of time. Private equity is smart. It's high risk. Right. And they learn fast. And they're going to learn franchising at a rate that franchisors have not.
100% agree. And I mean, I just see a lot of my friends that own franchises as a franchisor and just different people in the industry. A lot of people have made the mistakes. Private equity is getting a lot smarter. They are smart. They know this stuff. And I love it when it's aligned. Like when I'm getting into, I've got franchises now that I know they're going to sell to private equity. And that's, I like that I know that. But our goals are aligned to get as many locations open as fast as we can.
Yeah, but I would say they don't know that. They hope that. I'm going to make the case that there's going to be franchisors that are going to be put out of business by private equity. Imagine, just imagine you wake up one day, you're a franchisor, you got 50 units, your competitor's got 50 units. Next thing you know, they've got $2 billion worth of backing, right? And your royalties don't even make payroll yet. Who wins?
Exactly.
Yeah. What just happened to your value? That's what's going to happen in franchising. You could be a pickoff target, right? Mm-hmm. And that brand could get rolled into the category killing brand. That doesn't mean you're selling the private equity, right? That's good, right? That means you're being put out of business, right?
That means explain your brand that. Away. Unpack that a little bit more. As somebody that's looking to get into franchising, where should they? How should that impact them in the brands that they're looking at?
That's the question. How do you anticipate that, right? So, so item two, right? Has this management team ever built a brand in franchising before? If they haven't, what are you buying, right? Mm-hmm. Who's on the board, right? Where are they relative to the competitors, right? And how do they stack up from a managerial perspective? And value creation on the consumer-facing side, how they stack up against the competition. I think franchise candidates don't yet know. Instinctively, I think they get it because they're buying the bigger brands, but they don't know the level of supply-demand disequilibrium there is in franchising. So, so our data would say the market would probably support, 1,000, maybe 2,000 brands, but there's 4,000 or thereabouts, and there's 300 a year coming out, right? So if you're looking at private equity from a private equity perspective, let's say it takes 700 units to build a national brand, which is about right. Mm-hmm. You can grow it onesie twosie at a time, or you could pick off a lot of 25, 40 unit brands and cobble them up to a 700 unit brand and get a valuation that way, right? But those franchisors are getting cobbled up. They're not getting bought at a premium valuation because they're pick off targets.
But does the franchisee care? It's probably.
If I was a franchisee, I would care if I've got a competitor in my market from the consolidating brand, right? And so, let's say home healthcare, right? We had two home healthcare brands. Okay, if my home healthcare brand got picked off by another brand and there's a franchisee in the exact same space, then what's the value of my brand?
How often does that happen where private equity group has two competing franchise brands.
Doesn't happen for long because they rebrand it, right? They reflag the acquired company and they support one brand.
Yeah.
Right. So there's, and that will happen in franchise. In my estimation, that's maybe a couple, we're going to see massive, I think, brand consolidation in a lot of sectors.
But that's why it's important to go back to your point, to be a part of a team that has franchising experience to anticipate some of this stuff. And to, you know, they're just not getting into it thinking, I just want to grow and I don't have the capital to grow a bunch of brands across the country myself. So I'm just going to grow and scale by franchising. And if they don't have the people that have been there, done that, that are part of their team, that's a buyer beware.
Yeah. And I think I think it's time for franchisors to align financial interests more with the franchisees. Like, why couldn't a franchisee participate in a takeout?
Yeah.
Right. And work together on that and work together on that from Jump Street instead of pretending you're not operating the same brand.
Here's something that I've seen more with franchisors. They seem to be helping franchisees out in some of the pain points in the opening process. I've seen more help in site selection, finding locations, and I've seen more help in negotiating leases or having a team that's really used to negotiating leases so the franchisee doesn't just go find their own attorney somewhere. Yeah. I've seen franchisors get better at taking people through the entire build-out process. So the franchisor kind of manages that because it's a one-time thing or a infrequent thing that franchisees have to deal with. And it's a painful process to go through.
That's right.
So have you seen a trend in that, or am I just kind of noticing that as a franchisee myself?
I don't know if I've noticed it as a trend. I mean, it makes sense, right? So if you can't, franchisors, I think as a general rule for as long as I've been in franchises, they're more drunk on the franchise sale, right? More sales, more sales, more sales. But it's a lot of times at the expense of the existing franchisees. But when that's not occurring, like now it's harder to grow, then the franchisors have a tendency to focus on their own and protect their base, right? Because that's the live stream of the business. So in 2008 to 2010, when there wasn't new deals being done because there wasn't money to lend, I saw a hell of a lot of that, right?
Yeah.
Stuff we should have always been doing in the first place, right? Should have always been doing.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to, you know, and I think it's really helpful, especially for those new entrepreneurs coming in and having so much help on some of these big pain points that they don't have. So that's one of the things that I like, that and not all franchisors do it. They don't do all of it, but as long as they're, you know, thinking, how can I help these franchisees through some of the process?
Well, I think what they're going to do, you know, I mean, if I could dovetail your comment, not every royalty dollar has the same margin attached to it.
Right? Explain that.
Well, if I'm a high performing franchisee, I'm pumping in royalty dollars. What's my support cost? I don't need as much, right? Where's the franchisor invest their time, money, and energies on the bottom half for paying the least, right? On the flip side would be multi-unit franchisees. You know, like the franchisor has a tendency to support the franchisee, not the unit, right? So example would be, if I own five of something, I'm not five times. Pardon me on the chime in here. My calendar's blowing up. But I'm not five times more expensive to support than a single unit franchisee. Yet I'm contributing five times the royalty dollars, right? So when franchisors, when they actually start really analyzing the financial returns on the royalties dollars and how that equates to private equity and enterprise value, they're going to do things like, you know what? It's the lowest risk. Brand risk, if I take you, single unit franchise, let's say you're two-unit franchisee, add a third, then bringing in an entire wild card, new franchisee into the system that I don't know how they're going to perform, and it's cheaper for me. So why wouldn't I incent that growth? Why wouldn't I?
Where do you see the trend in that in the future in franchising of franchise? I mean, I've seen it. I've seen franchisors incentivize franchisees to grow. And I like it. I like to see that because it shows me that there's more alignment there. Where do you see that going in the next 5 years?
Awesome. We'll see more of that, in my opinion, because you know, private equity, which are numbers guys, right? There's going to be an intense, I think, scrutiny and study of how the franchisor unit level economics and numbers actually work, right? And where's the ROI and where's the real investment? You know, and nobody's really done a lot of math in any of the brands that I see, a lot of math. And like, what? How can I invest into the franchisee community? And what's my payout?
Yeah, that goes back into the alignment of everything. And the franchisors, you know, some franchisors understand that. Like you're saying, if the franchisor basically contributes $50,000 into a franchisee's location to get opened up, and it's whether it's a loan or a gift or whatever, but there's a $50,000
royalty abatement. They're going to collect royalties, right? Yeah.
But then that franchisor, 2 or 3 years later, maybe they're producing $50,000 in royalty. That's, and go back to your comment earlier of 10X. That's a $50,000 investment from the franchisor, $500,000 valuation for the franchisor.
Well, that assumes 100% of it flowed through to the bottom line, right? So yeah, the 10X.
No. This is of just a valuation. This is their
saying if you added $500,000 in equities based on that $50,000 royalty contribution, assuming there's no cost attached to that.
Correct.
Yeah, right. So wouldn't be 10X of the royalty stream, but not too far off, right?
No.
A lot of franchisors are gonna realize 50 to 80% of that as cash flow, real cash flow, right? So that number is probably closer to 250 to the number is probably closer to 50 to 80% of that royalty increment, 10X of that, right? As opposed to 100% of it. But still.
So 400,000.
Right, sure. Yeah, you're right. Exactly.
It's aligned. They're aligned for growth. And if both see that, it's a great thing for everybody.
Yeah.
All right. We're coming to an end here. I know that you have some meetings. I mean, you've been with me for a long time. I appreciate that. Anything else that you want to talk about that you see coming out in franchising or the new book? What do you see out there?
Yeah. So kind of a couple things, you know, so if I'm a franchisor, I need to be highly skilled, all right, in the business of franchising. I got to operate on a genius level, mastery level of recruiting, training, developing, leading a team of entrepreneurs to build a brand. And you either are or you're not, right? So if you're not, do what you're telling your, do for yourself, right? What you're telling your franchisees to do, which is get the experience, right? I'm not saying work with FPG, although I do highly recommend it. track record, right? But just make sure you just bring that into the equation. You know, those investments, if you get the right partners, strategic partners, have a tendency to pay out, right? And so that's number one. Number two, I would say pick up the book. What we're trying to do is we created the first, which I believe is the first framework for franchisors to look at to show how brands go, you know, from that, you know, first franchisee to, you know, 1,000 units, household iconic brand. Yeah. So you can kind of see where you are in the growth curve, identify predictably what challenges you're going to face as you move through that next inflection point, just to create some sort of strategic framework for yourself and your constituency. So those are like the two things. So look for iconic franchising. That should be out before June 1st. And we're going to put it out as a free ebook. And if I could, can I take one more second on that? Because there's something cool we're doing. So now I'm calling on all franchise thought leaders who are listening to your podcast. We're putting this book out as a final draft, not as a final. So for 6 months, we're going to invite you to go our LinkedIn site, which is Franchising Thought Leaders on LinkedIn. I want you to look at the framework. What are we missing? Okay, what's not there that you think would benefit franchising community? Give us your stories. Give us your data. Give us your best practices. We'll incorporate that into the final, which we'll re-release come January. So let's all work together to be part of the solution for the entrepreneur and drive, you know, great brands with real equity value and enterprise value for ourselves and for our franchisee partners.
Joe, it's been fun. I think anybody that's an aspiring franchisee will get a ton of value out of this. There's a lot to unpack for them. Franchisees that are there currently are probably going to look at their business a little bit differently after listening to this. And entrepreneurs who have a franchise organization or have a good a system, a good business, and they're thinking about how to grow that, how to scale that, check out FPG. I'll have links on my website, and I'll have links to the LinkedIn group and links to the book as well, Joe. So I really appreciate your time today, and thank you for being one of the innovators in franchising out there, and I appreciate you coming on to the show today.
Yeah, we appreciate what you're doing. We're all playing for the same team, trying to add value to the entrepreneur. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this podcast with Joe. If you are a franchisee and you're thinking about franchising, and maybe that's an avenue for you to get out of corporate America, or maybe thinking about your second or third brand, reach out to me at talkwitheric.com and we can get in touch if you're the right fit. If you're thinking about starting a franchise or you wanted to grow and scale your franchise, reach out to me on social media or email me at eric@ilovefranchising or eric@franchisesecrets.com and let me know what your questions are, and either we'll schedule time to talk or I will probably create a video or help answer your questions in the email. So thanks for listening to the show. In this show with Joe Matthews, we get into a lot of different things that I think franchisees, franchisors, aspiring franchisors, and aspiring franchisees are going to all learn from. We got into things like, how does a franchisor create value in their franchise? And this is something that a lot of franchisors are not doing. And the fun thing about it is it aligns with the franchisee. So franchisees and franchisors, if you're not doing this one thing, if you're not aligned in this one thing, you're both suffering. So we'll get into that. We'll talk about the book, Street Smart Franchising. It's Joe's first book that he put out, and it was a book that has a cult-like following. If you've never read it, you probably should. It's a book that I've read multiple times and been part of organizations that have given that book out 1,000 times or more. So we dive into that, why he wrote the book, what was the result of the book, and then we get into the future of franchising. Where is franchising going? Why you should care as somebody that's thinking about getting into it, or maybe you're a franchisor and you are wanting to see the trends in franchising. We dive into that. Joe got a start in Subway. I think it was at location 400. He helped open up with Fred DeLuca, and he was with them through the growth of 400 to 4,000. So he's got a tremendous amount of insight early on in Subway, saw that grow, and then took that into other organizations and helped them grow. And today he is putting a lot of content online that is read by many people, and a lot of people in my circles find a lot of value in what he's giving out there. So I hope you enjoy this show with Joe Matthews. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Franchise Secrets Podcast. Whether you're watching or listening, please make sure to subscribe to my YouTube channel and to whatever channel you're listening on. If you want my help with anything from buying a franchise to franchising your business, please visit franchisesecrets.com.